Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
If you visit Karnak Temple, you'll see the work of many kings. One pharaoh who deserves our memory is Horemheb. He's not the most famous ruler, but Horemheb is responsible for many of the monuments you see at the temple. For example, those enormous pylons, the great towers that mark the entrances of Karnak, Horemheb built three of them. He also renovated and remodeled huge areas in the temple's southern precinct. Today, visitors to Karnak pass by much of Horemheb's work, but the knowledgeable will notice. Hello. And welcome back to the History of Egypt podcast. Episode 164, You Must Construct Additional Pylons. Today, we begin to explore Horemheb's deeds as a ruler, specifically the monuments he commissioned at Karnak, and how this pharaoh shaped the site we see today. Horemheb's influence is greater than many realize. Today, we begin to see why. This episode comes to you as a monument funded by Ruben, Nicholas, and Steve. These fine folks donated to the podcast in February and March 2022. Thanks to their generosity, we are commissioning great pylon gateways with flagpoles 100 feet high and the very finest offerings for Amun-Ra, King of the Gods. Ruben, Nicholas, Steve, thank you kindly. Your generosity is most appreciated. To everyone listening, thank you for joining me. Come, let us tour Karnak Temple in the days of Horemheb. The year was 1329 BCE, approximately. Egypt's government now followed the authority and rule of Horemheb, and the new pharaoh had big plans, especially at Karnak. One of Horemheb's names as king was Wer-en-Biaut-em-Ipet-Sut. This translates as Great of Marvels in Ipet-Sut, or Great of Marvels in Karnak Temple. Quite a bold statement for a name. From the beginning, Horemheb committed to royal building projects in the House of Amun. Calling himself Great of Marvels may sound ambitious, considering his reign had just started. But to be fair, Horemheb probably had a reasonable claim to that already. You see, back in the reign of Tutankhamun, Horemheb had served as one of Egypt's highest officials. And among his many, many titles, he had a job related to monuments. Horemheb served Tutankhamun as the Overseer of Works in Southern and Northern Egypt, the Overseer of All the King's Works, and the Overseer of Works in Every Place. There are other titles with variations on the same theme, but the idea is clear enough. In the reign of Tutankhamun, Horemheb officially managed and led the royal building projects. With that in mind, he might reasonably claim that Tutankhamun's achievements were also his achievements. That would include monuments and restoration work at Karnak and Luxor temples. So with a bit of imagination, you can see how Horemheb would justify this name. Beyond the self-justification, though, Horemheb would also earn that name. His claim to be Great of Marvels was not idle boasting. By the end of his reign, his architects and builders had erected some truly spectacular monuments. And we'll see some of those in a moment. Becoming Great of Marvels was a challenge. For the past 30 years, Karnak had experienced a roller coaster of emotions, stunning glory and royal investment, then decline, abandonment, and even attack. Since then, new works had begun, but the scope of Karnak Temple and its needs was vast. For the new monarch, it would be a massive investment. Horemheb's architects and builders worked at Karnak throughout his reign. We are not sure if this was a single, continuous project, or if work proceeded in a stop-start fashion. Build a few things, finish off some monuments, take a break, come back a few years later. There are hints that certain buildings came later than others. But in general, it is surprisingly hard to pinpoint the phases of Horemheb's work, so I'll just tackle it all together. For the modern visitor, Horemheb's work is best defined by a single word, pylons. Pylons, or gates in Greek, are those towering edifices at the entrance to the temple. Most Egyptian sanctuaries had a pylon gateway, or at least the important ones did. And these towers marked the lavish investment of individual rulers. Throughout the 18th dynasty, great monarchs had invested in the construction of pylons. The trend began with Thutmose I, who built two of them at Karnak. Thutmose III built two more. Hatshepsut added one. And Amunhotep III started building three, but only finished one of them. So over the past couple hundred years, powerful rulers had focused their resources on pylon gateways. To date, the record was two completed in a single reign. Horemheb built three. In the course of his rule, Horemheb's architects and laborers constructed the masonry for three magnificent pylons. Now, to be fair, two of those were leftovers from Amunhotep III. But as far as we can tell, the builders serving Horemheb did 90% of the work. So if you are measuring a reign by pylons completed, then Horemheb would technically be the winner, the greatest pylon builder in history. That probably doesn't sound too impressive, but for modern tourists, Horemheb's work is the defining feature of Karnak's enclosure and gates. The pylons which rose during his reign enhance some of the most significant areas. As we will see, these structures were incredibly important, and generations of locals honored the achievement. As I mentioned, Horemheb probably inherited a real mess at Karnak. It would take time to clear all that up. First, there was a suite of buildings left unfinished by his predecessors. So, job number one, finish those projects. He started with the pylons. Officially, Horemheb is responsible for pylon 2, pylon 9, and pylon 10. Now, scholars number these pylons based on their location. Pylons 1 to 6 go from the west to the east, along the temple's primary axis. If you are coming from the River Nile, or the tourist entrance, you enter Karnak through pylon number 1. Then, there are five more pylons behind it. Horemheb built the second of these. Today, tourists approach Karnak from the west. You go past the ancient harbour and the docks. You walk along a road lined with sphinxes, and you pass the towering edifice of Pylon 1. Then, you enter an enormous open-air court. This space is full of buildings, columns by Taharqa, shrines by Seti II, a temple from Ramesses III, and a great statue of Ramesses II. All of this came after King Horemheb, and all of it stands in the way, in front of his magnificent pylon. As you enter this court, you are faced with the ruins of Pylon 2. It stretches to your left and right, and it may not look like much, but there is more than meets the eye. When Horemheb took power, this pylon was a tiny mound of rubble. It may have started under Amunhotep III, but if that's accurate, the work probably didn't get much past the foundations. And Akhenaten never added to it, nor did Tutankhamun. So Horemheb's builders basically started from scratch, and over the course of his reign, they erected a truly magnificent gate. Pylon 2 is massive, 46 meters long, or 150 feet, and 14 meters wide, 45 feet. Its door was 30 meters high, about 90 feet, and the towers rose, we don't even know how tall they were. This building was truly colossal. The doorway was granite, with scenes of Horemheb offering to the gods. The doors themselves were cedar wood imported from Lebanon, and probably decorated with gold, silver, and copper. Put that together, and you can imagine a lavish entrance for the temple. The exterior was even grander. The pylon's face had 8 niches, rectangular gaps set into the masonry. These niches were the support structures for 8 towering flagpoles. Massive poles of cedar wood rose up to stand even higher than the pylon. At their peaks, brightly coloured flags fluttered in the breeze. These flagpoles were one of the most distinctive elements of the pylon. And they weren't just decorative, they actually had names. Hieroglyphic texts referring to Pylon 2 give us the names of these flagpoles. Each one was associated with a goddess. We know 5 of the 8. Apparently, there was a flagpole for Hut-Her, or Hathor, for Nekbet, for Mut, for Amunet, and for Renutet. These 5 goddesses, each of whom had various powers and domains, stood guard at the front of Pylon 2, and the goddess's banners flew from the peaks. So the pylon was not just a magnificent structure. It had protection from the mightiest of goddesses. Beyond the flagpoles, Pylon 2 also had some lovely decoration. Horemheb commissioned large scenes showing festivals of the gods. Unfortunately, most of these scenes were replaced, carved over, by later rulers. But archaeologists can study traces of Horemheb's work beneath the re-carvings. For example, on the northern edge of the pylon, to the right if you are facing the front, there is the shadow of a ram. This ram is the decoration of a ship. Originally, the scene displayed a massive riverboat sailing on the Nile. That boat belonged to Amun-Ra. And since Amun could appear as a ram, his boat was decorated at the fore and aft with images of rams. Today, the ram head is a ghostly shadow, but it's still visible in the right light. Although later rulers modified these scenes, the work of Horemheb's artists survives, if you know where to look. Of course, the pylon also had images of Horemheb himself. The king appears before the gods, giving food and drink to the great deities. Again, later rulers carved their names over the top of Horemheb's, so it can be hard to identify him by sight. But scholars studying these works can find the traces, and with a bit of reconstruction, we can identify the original text. So today, the cartouches have other names, but for the knowledgeable tourist, we can give credit where credit is due. The second pylon was a massive project, and one that probably cost a lot of funding. All of that stone, the cedar wood, the metal for the door, that was a massive investment. But this was all part of the plan. Horemheb was aiming big. How big? Well, from later records, we get a hint at the name of this pylon. Apparently, it was called Illuminating Waset, or Illuminating Thebes. Talk about a statement. Horemheb's pylon was intended to dazzle and outshine everything before it, and ideally, everyone who came to Karnak should be in awe of this monument. Surprisingly, Horemheb's plan seems to have worked. The second pylon served as the main entrance for Karnak Temple. The east-west road leading from the Nile to the inner sanctuaries was defined by this gate, and the locals recognized that. Generations after Horemheb, someone carved a picture of Pylon 2 in one of Karnak's shrines. The image shows Pylon 2 from the front. We see the towers on either side of the door, and we see the flagpoles, each one standing taller than the pylon itself. On those flagpoles, small labels give the names of each goddess, and that's how we know about those names. We see a vulture hovering above the door, and a winged sun disk hovering over everything. The image even includes little details, like the metal clamps or supports that hold the flagpoles in place, and the lintels above the door, decorated with emblems. The artist, apparently, has captured a mental photograph of the pylon and then carved that on the wall. Which is cool. We don't often get these recreations of monuments in Egyptian art. The image is stylized, but it's a fascinating piece of art. The fact that royal artists were creating images of this pylon long after Horemheb's death gives a sense of its importance. Pylon 2 was grand, impressive, magnificent, all the adjectives that a pharaoh might expect. But even more importantly, Pylon 2 was enduring. This gateway, on the temple's western limit, served as the main entrance to Karnak as a whole. And it held this title for nearly 1,000 years. As you can guess from the name, Pylon 2 is the second gate on the east-west axis. In front of it, Pylon 1 marks the current entrance to the temple. But Pylon 1 did not rise until 370 BCE, approximately. That means that Horemheb's pylon stood, unchallenged, for almost 10 centuries. At the time, that was an undisputed record. For many kings, a pylon this magnificent would be a job well done. The temple had a new entrance with lavish decorations and design. Everyone was impressed. They could pop open a jug of wine and toast their accomplishment. But as I mentioned, Horemheb is a record holder for Karnak pylon construction. And as we'll see in a moment, his two other pylons are wonders in their own right. After the break, we will visit the southern limits of Karnak Temple. We will explore the two additional pylons that have their own unique features and stories. Along the way, we even get a glimpse of Horemheb's personal contributions, as the king gets down in the dirt to establish his monuments. That is after the break. See you in a moment.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In 1329 BCE, give or take, Karnak Temple thronged with activity. Royal building projects were everywhere. A new gateway, Pylon No. 2, was rising on the temple's western road. Facing the Nile, Pylon 2 would serve as the face of Karnak Temple. Anyone passing by on the river or approaching the sacred precinct saw that pylon. But on the southern side, Karnak has another entrance. This one does not face the Nile. It faces towards the other temples of the city. The Temple of Mut, Great Mother Goddess, and the Temple of Luxor, Ipet Resit, both look towards Karnak's southern entrance. And between these great sanctuaries, the famous Avenue of Sphinxes runs for more than a kilometre. It connects the houses of the gods. The southern entrance was another priority for Horemheb. Having established his grand pylon in the west, the king and his architects now looked south. In the southern precinct of Karnak, they built another pylon. No, scratch that, they built two. Here, at the limits of the enclosure, Horemheb's builders went to work on a pair of pylon gates. Once again, these pylons are still standing. We call them pylons 9 and 10. Pylons 9 and 10 are the last gateways on the southern axis. If you are exploring the temple today, you'll probably encounter them last on your itinerary. They are denuded, partially collapsed, and decayed. But there is still plenty to see, and for the enthusiastic tourist, they are well worth your time. Let's start with pylon 9.
Number 9.
Pylon 9 is a grand edifice. Each tower stands 26 meters tall, about 85 feet. And put together, the gateway stretches 65 meters wide, 216 feet. So it's big. Almost as big as pylon 2 on the west. Back in the day, this gateway was really impressive. Again, pylon 9 was probably a mound of rubble or foundations when Horemheb took the throne. It seems the project definitely started under King Amunhotep III. But he never finished it, or at least he didn't finish it in stone. Beneath this pylon, archaeologists have found traces of mud brick, probably belonging to Amunhotep. But the bricks don't go far. It seems that Horemheb superseded them. There's a decent chance that Horemheb initiated this building project personally. In the 1980s, an archaeological team was exploring the pylon, and they found objects buried within the masonry. A series of items, including small bricks, model tools, and even gold, emerged from the core. Some of these items bore the cartouches of Horemheb. These are foundation deposits. Foundation deposits are a ritual that most pharaohs undertook when starting a monument. They're quite common, and they can be an excellent way to identify the owner, quote-unquote, of a particular building. Basically, a foundation deposit is the burial of ritual goods, often including small bricks and model tools. It seems to be an offering to the deities to ensure the stability of the monument. The builders place these before starting work to ensure a proper construction. For his foundation, Horemheb laid a plaque made of faience. He also placed a mud brick, stamped with his cartouche. There were small objects made of gold and shaped like flowers. And there was a series of models, tiny items representing grain, vegetables, poultry, and beef. There were tools, small versions of actual working instruments, a stone grinder for turning wheat into flour, animal bones from meat offerings, and a collection of bric-a-brac, nice pieces of stone in various colours. It seems that Horemheb laid a small treasure trove of symbolic offerings. Everything you might give to a god for their nourishment or their blessing. These items went into the foundations as Horemheb inaugurated the pylon. So we have a small foundation deposit, similar to ones found in other monuments. And the objects themselves are fairly conventional. They are nice, but nothing out of the ordinary. So you might be forgiven for thinking that Horemheb's deposit is just one among many, yet another record of ancient building. That is true, but there is one element that is quite distinctive, which I personally like. It has to do with the location of these items. Traditionally, a foundation deposit appears beneath a monument, you know, in the foundations. But the items found in pylon 9 are different. These ones were in the structure itself, lodged within the masonry. Why? Well, as I mentioned, pylon 9 probably started under Amunhotep III. So when Horemheb took power, the masonry was at least partially built. That would have made it difficult to lay a proper foundation deposit. You can't just dig up the base of the pylon. So Horemheb had to place them within the new masonry that was going up in its place. And when archaeologists found these objects, many of them had slipped out of their original place. The offerings rested in sand and earth. But in the slightly unusual confines, the items shifted and moved during construction. For me, that conjures a slightly funny image. You can picture Horemheb in his crowns and finest clothing, scrambling up over a layer of masonry and rubble. He digs his hands into sand or dirt, clearing a space between the mud bricks. And he lays these objects to rest, but the location is not quite ideal, and things shifted around. By the end, I like to imagine Horemheb climbing down off the pylon, his linen garments stained with dirt and sand. Kind of funny, amidst all the pomp and ceremony. Anyway, historically, Pylon 9 is quite interesting. It is rare to get such a good glimpse at the layers of construction. And thanks to excellent archaeological work, we have a good idea of the pylon when Horemheb inherited it, and how he continued and finished that work. It gives a vague glimpse into the events of those days. Sadly, Pylon 9 has suffered quite badly over the centuries. Today, the middle of the pylon is mostly gone. Basically, locals have taken away the bricks and stone over the centuries to use for their own purposes. The outer edges of each tower survive, but between them is a void. That's a shame, but it does give the pylon a distinctive silhouette. If you look at this gate from the front, it has two peaks on either side, then a big dip in the middle. Each tower looks like a giant letter U. Or, if you want to go ancient with it, each tower looks like the hieroglyph Akhet. Akhet, or horizon, is formed by two mounds with a deep valley between. So Horemheb's ninth pylon has accidentally turned into a giant hieroglyph. It is a southern horizon for Karnak Precinct. Personally, I think that's fun. Even better, though, is the inside. Pylon 9 was designed to be hollow. There is a staircase running up the inside of each tower. The idea was to give access to windows, or maybe even balconies, higher up in the edifice. That way, priests could access the upper levels for ceremonies or maintenance work. Now, many pylons have this internal staircase. It is not unique. But what makes Pylon 9 cool is that the staircase is accessible. In most pylons, these internal staircases are blocked and closed. But at the time of writing, Pylon 9 is still open. You can visit it. If you are facing the pylon from the front or south, the right-hand tower has a small doorway. If you find it, you can go up the stairs. I do not recommend this for groups. We want to preserve the monument. But if you're in the area by yourself, you can take a quiet look. Just be careful and respect the structure. Pylon 9 is fascinating, and it might be my favorite pylon. But Pylon 10 is probably more important. This gate is the southernmost entrance to Karnak Temple. And visiting this pylon, you are in the presence of remarkable stories. Pylon 10 was another of those monuments that Horemheb inherited from earlier kings. Based on the archaeological remains, it seems that Amunhotep III also started to work on this building. But once again, it didn't get very far before his death. A few layers of brick at most. So, Horemheb inherited the project. And decades after Amunhotep III had died, the new pharaoh finished it. This pylon bore lavish decorations and images. On the outer walls, Horemheb appeared as a warrior, smiting his enemies with a mace. These images were rendered at colossal scale. If you were approaching the pylon from the front, the pharaoh would absolutely tower overhead, a kaiju-level king. The rest of the pylon has your standard images, Horemheb before the gods. We see the king make offerings to various deities like Mut, the Great Mother, Khonsu, Lord of the Moon, Nefertem, the Lotus Flower, and various incarnations of Amun-Ra. Basically, Horemheb appears with the gods who rule over Waset, Thebes. Fair enough, Karnak is in Waset, and Waset is the home of these deities. So the 10th pylon reflects local priorities. It's all fairly traditional, but it's nice that it survives. Pylon 10 marks the southern limit of Karnak. Like its counterpart in the west, Pylon number 2, This gate marked the outer limits of the temple. But unlike Pylon 2, Pylon 10 has never been replaced. From the moment of its completion, the gate has stood unchallenged as the entrance to this area. As a result, Horemheb's builders achieved another record in pylon longevity. And this one is even better. Pylon 2 in the west stood unchallenged for nearly 1,000 years. But in the south, Pylon 10 is unchallenged for 3,300 and counting. Hats off to Horemheb's builders. They are the undisputed heavyweights of pylon construction. Together, Pylon 10 and Pylon 9 form a unit, a grand architectural feature on the southern edge of Karnak. With these monuments, Horemheb's builders added a massive area to the overall temple. They extended the length of Amun's house by a good 200 meters on the south. That may not sound like much, but it really was quite significant. Horemheb's new monuments increased the total area of Karnak Temple by a third. That is an achievement. There is more to say about these pylons, specifically their masonry and their construction. But I'm going to save that for episode 165, because it relates to larger questions of this period. For now, let's bring this chapter to its close. In 1329 BCE, Horemheb launched a massive building project. Royal architects and labourers would construct enormous gates, pylons, for Karnak Temple. The house of Amun-Ra would grow significantly over the course of Horemheb's reign. And by the time the pharaoh died, he had massively increased the size of the temple. Today, Horemheb's monuments are often overlooked, but the great pylons, numbers 2, 9, and 10, are still important. They defined the limits of Karnak for centuries, and in the case of the southern gates, they still define those limits. For 3,000 years and more, pylons 9 and 10 have marked the southern entrance to the precinct. By any metric you measure, Horemheb's builders are the gold medalists for pylon construction. Having served Tutankhamun as an overseer of works, Horemheb was uniquely placed to embellish Karnak, and through his reign, his officials and representatives would succeed far beyond their predecessors. In the end, the work of these people helped Horemheb become great of marvels in Epet Sut. Karnak owes a great deal to this king's patronage. Next time, we explore additional monuments that Horemheb commissioned in the temple. Smaller buildings in this area bear testament to his work and piety. Also, Horemheb's architects did something quite unusual. While building pylons 9 and 10, they actually moved some older buildings to a new location. It is a rare example of Egyptians dismantling and then rebuilding older structures. Next time, we will see how that worked. Thank you for joining me, and I will see you soon. Take care, and may Hathor, Nekbet, Mut, Amunet, and Renutet bless you. May the goddesses of the flagpoles guide your building projects and ensure that your gates stand tall for 3,000 years.
Construct additional pylons. sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.